A recent analysis found that over 70% of protein crystals grown in space are superior in size, structure, and uniformity to anything produced on Earth. This isn't science fiction, it's the new frontier of manufacturing. The question for executives isn't if this will impact their business, but how soon. Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly briefing on the technology that's reshaping global industry. I'm Susie.
And I'm Troy.
This week, the story isn't just about space exploration, it's about space industrialization. We're seeing a convergence of three powerful trends: a manufacturing gold rush in zero gravity, a fierce and diversifying race to build the infrastructure to get there, and a massive geopolitical push to write the rules and secure the high ground. We're moving from orbital labs to orbital factories.
Precisely. The conversations are shifting from research to return on investment. We'll break down what this means for advanced manufacturing, supply chains, and the competitive landscape for Western companies.
Okay, Troy, let's start with this manufacturing gold rush. We're hearing about pharmaceuticals, semiconductors, and advanced materials being made in orbit. What's actually happening, and why now?
It's the confluence of lower launch costs and a mature understanding of microgravity's physical advantages. Without gravity, you suppress convection and sedimentation. This allows for the creation of materials with a purity and structure impossible to achieve on Earth.
So what does that mean in practical terms for a drug company or a chip maker?
Take pharmaceuticals. A meta-analysis, which the U.S. Department of Defense is highlighting, confirms that over 70% of protein crystals grown in space are of a higher quality. This is critical. Merck, for example, is already exploring this for its cancer drug, Keytruda. Better crystals mean faster, more accurate drug design. Redwire subsidiary SpaceMD has already crystallized 45 different compounds in space, including insulin. They've now booked a major commercial mission on a SpaceX Starfall spacecraft for 2028 to fly 32 of their automated pillbox labs.
So this is scaling up from single experiments to actual production runs. What about manufacturers and electronics and advanced materials?
It's a similar story. The lack of buoyancy and microgravity can trap gas bubbles in carbon fiber composites, degrading them, but it also allows for the creation of pure semiconductor materials. Companies like SpaceForge in the UK are developing automated orbital platforms for this. The ISS National Lab just selected 8 startups for its Orbital Edge Accelerator, including Astrolu, which is developing photomasks for next-generation AI chips in space.
So for European and U.S. manufacturers in these high-tech sectors, what's the immediate threat and opportunity?
The opportunity is a new R&D and manufacturing paradigm that could create breakthrough products. The threat is falling behind. This isn't just a U.S. phenomenon. The U.K. satellite applications Catapult is launching a beta marketplace called Levitas this autumn to connect companies with these microgravity R&D opportunities. The University of Liverpool's MicroH team just won €250,000 from Germany's Sprint agency to advance their work.
So what should a trading company that sources advanced chemicals or electronic components be thinking about?
They need to start tracking which specialty materials are moving to in-space production. Sourcing partnerships may need to shift from Asia to new orbital providers. The key is market intelligence, knowing when these space-manufactured products will become commercially viable and at what price point. Redwire has already partnered with Japanese trading giant Kanimatsu to bring its microgravity tech to the Japanese market.
And the actionable insight for an executive listening right now.
Executives in pharmaceuticals, biotech, and semiconductor manufacturing need to assign a team to evaluate microgravity R&D. Start small. Use platforms like the UK's Levitas or see what the ISS National Lab offers. The cost of entry is falling, but the cost of being left out of the next material science revolution could be immense.
This all depends on getting to space, Troy. For years, the story has been SpaceX. What's the state of the launch market that enables all this orbital activity?
The market is diversifying and competition is intensifying, which is good news for anyone buying a ride to orbit. While SpaceX is a dominant force, we're seeing serious, well-funded challengers emerge with new technology. Stoke Space, for instance, just raised $1 billion to accelerate its fully reusable Nova rocket, and they're targeting a full 2-stage return launch this month on August 13th.
A full 2-stage return? That's the holy grail, isn't it? Even SpaceX's Falcon 9 doesn't do that.
Correct. It's the key to transformative launch costs. Rocket Lab is also a major player. They've already launched 13 missions this year with their Electron rocket. Now they're developing the larger, reusable Neutron rocket. Its debut may slip to 2027, but they've already secured major government contracts for it, including a $397 million deal with the U.S. Space Force.
And we're not just talking about commercial players. This is all happening in the context of major national programs, like NASA's return to the moon.
Exactly. NASA's Artemis program is a huge driver. The Artemis II mission successfully sent a crew around the moon in April 2026, and they are targeting a landing in 2028. To support this, NASA is being very pragmatic. They've repurposed technology from the canceled Halo module, originally for the Gateway space station, into three demonstration missions with Northrop Grumman to test lunar surface power, thermal management, and communications.
So how does this hardware, like the new lunar seismograph, affect manufacturers back on Earth?
The Lunar Environment Monitoring Station, or LEMS, is a perfect example. It's designed to operate through the frigid 2-week lunar night without traditional radioisotope heaters. It uses advanced insulation and a thermoregulator. This technology, lightweight, hyper-efficient thermal management, has direct applications for U.S. and European manufacturers working on anything from industrial equipment for extreme environments to next-generation EV battery casings.
And what about the competition from China?
It's formidable. The Chinese commercial firm Landspace is attempting the second launch and landing of its Zhuhai-3 methane-powered rocket on August 10th. Its performance is designed to be comparable to a Falcon 9. A successful recovery would signal that China's commercial sector is rapidly closing the technology gap in reusable rockets.
So, for Western trading and distribution companies, what's the takeaway on the launch market?
The launch market is becoming more segmented and competitive. You have dedicated small satellite launchers like Rocket Lab's Electron, medium-lift workhorses like Falcon 9, and soon Neutron and Zhuhai-3, and heavy-lift systems like Starship. This means more options for scheduling, orbit, and price. Distributors of aerospace-grade components should see growing demand from a wider customer base beyond the traditional primes.
Final action point for executives on this topic?
If your business model involves getting assets into space, it's time to reevaluate your launch strategy. Don't default to a single provider. Engage with the emerging players like Stoke Space and Rocket Lab. A multi-vendor strategy will mitigate risk and improve your negotiating position as the market continues to heat up.
With all this activity, commercial, civil, and military, the frameworks that govern space must be evolving. What's the latest on the policy and data processing side of this equation?
It's a global race to create a favorable environment for a domestic space economy, while also building out the defense architecture. In the U.S., we've seen a major push to streamline regulations. The FAA completed its transition to the performance-based Part 450 licensing rules in March 2026, which is designed to speed up approvals. They've even proposed environmental waivers to handle the launch demand from constellations like Starlink and future orbital data centers.
Orbital data centers? We've talked about orbital factories, but now data farms?
It's a concept gaining serious traction. The Republic News recently called it a crazy idea worth pursuing. Terrestrial data centers face huge power, cooling, and land use challenges. In space, you have abundant solar power, and the vacuum is a near-perfect coolant. Companies are already moving. StarCloud Inc. is orbiting NVIDIA GPUs, and Axiom Space is building data center nodes. SpaceX has reportedly sought approval for up to 1 million orbital data center satellites.
1 million satellites for data centers? That changes the game for data infrastructure.
It fundamentally alters it, and it explains the technology shift we're seeing away from just downlinking raw data. The trend is toward onboard processing using radiation-hardened AI chips. Satellites are becoming smarter, analyzing data in orbit and only sending down the crucial insights. This is vital for military applications where real-time intelligence is non-negotiable.
That brings us to the defense angle. How are governments in the U.S. and Europe responding?
With huge investment and strategic partnerships. The U.S. Space Force budget for fiscal year 2027 is a staggering $71.1 billion. A key part of that is a $7 billion request for space-based airborne moving target indication, or SBAMTI satellites. This is a constellation designed to track stealth aircraft and missiles from orbit. In a significant move, the Space Force just awarded $615 million in contracts for this program to Rocket Lab and two other firms, a clear strategy to diversify away from relying solely on SpaceX.
And it's not just the U.S. What are we seeing from Europe and Japan?
The European Space Agency approved a record 22 billion euro 3-year budget in late 2025. Japan has established a 1 trillion yen space strategy fund, aiming to double its domestic space market to 8 trillion yen by the early 2030s. We're also seeing key transatlantic partnerships, like Japan's Mitsubishi Electric, teaming with U.S. startup Array Labs to develop that same SBAMTI technology for the Asia-Pacific.
For a European technology firm, what's the implication of this massive government spending and regulatory shift?
It means that national and regional space strategies are industrial policy now. To win contracts, you must align with these strategic priorities, whether it's the ESA's vision, Japan's new fund, or the Pentagon's focus on a resilient, diversified industrial base. The U.S. Senate just passed a bipartisan bill to create a Commercial Space Activity Advisory Committee to ensure federal policy is directly informed by industry leaders.
Actionable insight for executives in this domain?
Engage with these new government bodies and funding mechanisms immediately. If you are a U.S. or European company in AI, cybersecurity, advanced electronics, or data analytics, your technology is now critical space infrastructure. Your customer is no longer just a terrestrial enterprise. It's the national space ecosystem.
All right, Troy, it's been a packed briefing. Let's distill this into a clear strategic summary. What are the 3 key takeaways for our listeners this week?
First, microgravity is now an industrial domain. The experimental phase is ending. For U.S. and European manufacturers in pharmaceuticals, advanced composites, and semiconductors, the question is no longer if you will have an orbital competitor, but when. Executives must begin building in-house expertise or partnerships to explore this frontier now.
Second,
the launch market is becoming more dynamic and competitive. The near monopoly on reusable rockets is breaking, with new, well-funded players in both the U.S. and China. This will create more options and price pressure, benefiting any company that needs to get assets to orbit. It's a critical time for supply chain managers to diversify their launch procurement strategies.
And the third key takeaway?
Government policy is actively shaping this new economy. Trillion yen funds, multi-billion dollar defense contracts, and streamlined regulations are creating powerful tailwinds. To succeed, Western companies must align their technology roadmaps with these national strategic priorities. The door is open for commercial firms to become integral partners in national security and economic growth, but you have to be at the table.
Troy, thank you. That was a comprehensive look at a sector that is clearly moving at light speed. The shift from exploration to industrialization is a theme we'll be tracking closely.
My pleasure, Susie. The pace of change is accelerating, and the strategic implications are profound.
That's all the time we have for this week's Troy Technical Intelligence. Join us next week for your essential briefing on the technology shaping our world. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an update.